My guest at this time is Dan Bongino. He is a former highly ranked member of the U.S. Secret Service. He left that lucrative position to run for U.S. Senate in Maryland in 2012. He lost to Democrat incumbent Ben Cardin. He is now a candidate for the U.S. House of Representatives in 2014 in the state of Maryland. And Dan, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Dan is also the author of Life Inside the Bubble, Why a Top-Ranked Secret Service Agent Walked Away from It All. So he's here to explain that. And Dan, first of all, we should point out that you became a Secret Service agent in the later years of the Clinton administration, eventually worked yourself up to the presidential detail. And a lot of the book is actually about those instances in the detail. But as you compare President Bush to President Obama, and those are the presidents you worked for here in Washington, what's the main difference in how you observe them publicly?
This may shock a lot of people to hear, but when you leave the policy disagreements aside, and obviously, you know, me running as a Republican, standing for, a libertarian conservative ideology, I had a lot of policy disagreements with President Obama. Personally, they weren't that much different. They were both friendly with the agents. They kept a pretty good schedule. I know that surprises a lot of people to hear, but, you know, I'm interested in the truth, not propaganda. You know, one thing I always mention about President Bush, though, that always touched me personally, I had a lot more time with him than President Obama, was he really had a passionate personal love for the troops, firemen, and police officers, people who, you know, put their lives on the line pretty much every day to keep us safe. And to ever watch him grab a, you know, Gold Star mom who had lost one of their sons or daughters in combat and embrace them and see the tears coming out of his eyes was very touching to see. And it was actually almost difficult at times to pay attention to the job watching that. So, it was an amazing experience working for them both.
And so your decision ultimately to leave the Secret Service was based more on what you simply observed happening in the country, not necessarily what you observed firsthand in how this president was going about his job in front of you.
Yeah, and I don't want to. The idea of the book was not to be some kind of salacious tell-all. The idea of the book was to give folks a general idea through my 12 years in government, spending time in the D.C. bubble. What's wrong from my perspective as a Secret Service agent? And what I do is I try to contrast some of the experiences I had as an agent, whether it was in a war zone in Afghanistan protecting the president or, you know, guarding foreign leaders and having dealt with these people. What's wrong with the mentality and some of the good people I worked with and how a government full of people who I think genuinely care constantly gets it wrong? And that's why I threw in those chapters in the end on Benghazi and Boston, Fast and Furious, from an insider's perspective. I'm giving you a perspective I don't think you've heard before. And my diagnosis of this really polluted D.C. cesspool of insiders that are really corrupting the system. It's not the people that get up and go to work in the morning that are causing the problem. It's these bow-tie-wearing bureaucrats that are really corrupting the system and making what was a representative government only representative of a special interest, and that interest isn't yours.
Dan, you mentioned President Bush's affinity for the troops and first responders. You also talked about your work in Afghanistan. There's an interesting story in the book about how the president came to Afghanistan under a cloak of darkness in a lot of ways, even landing in a sandstorm. And he was set to meet with a lot of different important figures from our military operation over there, including a Delta Force agent who was armed as he waited for the meeting. And you were not exactly receptive to the idea from someone in the administration that the Delta Force officer disarmed before meeting with the president. Was that an idea of some of the bureaucracy that goes inside the bubble?
Yeah, that's exactly it. The story you just told is really an epidemic of what you see by out-of-touch insiders. You know, that order didn't come from the president, President Obama. He didn't say, have this Delta Force guy leave his weapon at the door. It would have been ridiculous. We were on Bagram Air Base, and there were weapons everywhere. It was an active war zone. It was this elitist staffer. Again, it speaks to a mentality where this Delta Force guy, I described him vividly, that thousand-mile stare. I can only imagine the information he had in his head when he'd been through. I laughed at him, asking me to tell this guy to leave his weapon at the door. The utter absurdity of it really sums up in one story what the book tried to get at, this insulated insider atmosphere that has really destroyed what was the best system of government we've ever had, which really represented the interests of the people. You know, 9 out of 10 people, you ask them, to do that, to go up to a Delta Force guy and ask him to drop his weapon at the door and act, they'd laugh at you. So, yeah, I'm glad you brought up that story. This is one of the first interviews they've actually talked about that.
You just said that has destroyed the greatest system of government in the world, not is destroying or is threatening. Explain why you believe it's already occurred.
Yeah, because on both sides, at least we used to have one side fighting against this insiderism, this cronyism. But now I feel the real battle, frankly, is not Democrats or Republicans anymore. I think there are weak Republicans and Democrats all in cahoots together to prolong this insider system. I think the real battle now is government elitists, the foie gras eating lunch for lunch crowd, versus American populists, just regular middle class Americans trying just to get the government to leave them alone. I think they've really ruptured that relationship. And it's up to us to for a new, and there's a call to action at the end of the book, for a new degree of citizen activism to fight both sides that seem to believe that our liberty is their gift.
Dan, you mentioned some of the issues that you're passionate about that end up towards the end of the book, Benghazi, Fast and Furious, and so forth. When you decided in, I guess it was 2011, to leave the Secret Service and mount this bid for the U.S. Senate, was there one issue in particular that convinced you that, yes, now is the time I have to do this, I have to put this great career behind me and try to serve in an important time? Or was it just an accumulation of all these things?
Well, it was an accumulation of all of them, but a particularly acute incident was being behind the scenes as a Secret Service agent and just seeing the carousel of insider interest coming in and out of the White House as Obamacare was being passed, and just the horror of the American people actually believing that this was meant to give them better access to health care. It was totally ridiculous, not evidenced by the people coming in and out of Capitol Hill and the White House. It was an insider rigged system from the start. There's no question about it. And if there was one moment, though, that tip of the spear more than the others, that really frustrated me. I knew I had to do something and leave it all behind and take on a bigger cause.
You also believe that this cronyism that's going on in Washington is harming the Secret Service, because you and your colleagues were sent out to investigate things like where Gibson Guitar gets its wood as opposed to potential terrorist threats. You specifically compare it to the Tsarnaev brothers up in Boston.
Yeah, and that's the irony. There are some, to be fair, there are some on both sides of the political fence, and a couple, although not many, Secret Service people, most anonymous, not coincidentally, who said, oh, well, I don't think we should be, writing a book about this kind of stuff. And my take to them is, well, who do you think's going to change it? If people who know on the inside what is wrong don't speak out to change it for a better tomorrow, how do you expect even organizations like the Secret Service to change for the better? There's no way. This is not some get-rich scheme, okay, folks? It's a get-poor scheme. No one makes money writing books. Anybody who's written a book knows that. If you're not Stephen King, forget it. I forfeited away everything, my salary, my health care, to speak out. I assure you, my intentions here are pure and are noble. I really care about a better tomorrow, and if people who know don't speak out, we're only going to be complaining about a terrible yesterday. There'll be no better tomorrow.
Trying to get your thoughts here on some of the very public issues related to the Secret Service. There was, of course, the situation with the prostitutes in Colombia. Just in the last couple of weeks, there was a story about an agent who left bullets in a hotel room, presumably with a prostitute. What's your sense on not only the image that that brings to the Secret Service, but why these things keep happening?
Well, it hurts, but these things happen. I think we should be clear to people, not absolving anyone of any responsibility. I don't think the guys involved have absolved themselves of any responsibility. They've certainly taken the blame for it and the punishment. Any organization full of fallible human beings are going to make mistakes. What we hear in the Secret Service, and you're guarding the President of the United States, they're going to become public mistakes. The Secret Service, I thought, handled both incidents appropriately. I think the people have taken responsibility. And, I think it's time to remember the bigger picture here, that these men and women, I worked with them for a long time, are more than willing to forfeit their lives and their safety and their future prosperity and everything else to protect our system of government. And, I admire that, and I'm not asking you to forget it, but, forgive and keep the larger picture in mind.
You ran for Senate in 2012. Maryland is obviously a deep blue state, so Senator Cardin was able to win re-election. You're now running for the U.S. House of Representatives in a district that was formerly represented by Republican Roscoe Bartlett, but Democrats in the state capitol in Maryland made it a lot more Democratic-leaning, and so a Democrat now holds that seat. How do you view that race going forward here?
Yeah, I think we're in really good shape. The numbers look terrific for us. You know, measuring any campaign by media, volunteers, and money on all of those categories, outside of the money where we're trailing, but not by much, my opponent, we are just really destroying them on media coverage of our campaign, volunteers, grassroots activity. I view the district as really a very competitive one, D+2 for those wonks out there. And I think we're going to take it back. I'm pretty confident. Everything looks really good for us. And, no, you may outspend us, but you're never, ever going to outwork us. There's just no way. Not possible.
Talk a little bit more to our listeners about what it's going to take to bring back America the way it used to be. Obviously, you believe folks like you need to win important races. You need Americans to get active in the political process and so forth. How does it all come together eventually to bring it back to the way it was?
Well, that's a great question. The benefits and the prosperity of a country that has a deep middle class are terrific, but the downside is at times it tends to develop some apathy. You know, folks, I leave you with a call to action at the end of the book. Voting's not enough. It's not. You haven't done your duty by voting. If you're not calling your congressman, you first know who your congressman is. If you're not calling him, if you're not sending letters to the office, if you're not volunteering for campaigns or volunteering for a cause, if you're not donating money to a cause or a campaign, even a dollar, it doesn't matter, then, folks, you're not, you know, part of the problem. You're the problem. We need you. We need your voice. The left has been experts at this for years, whittling away our freedom. Voting is not enough. I cannot say that enough. You have to do. Talk is cheap. Action matters. Action is what changes the world. Talk is only good if it changes action.
Dan, you mentioned that you believe it's important for folks to act, not just talk. How can folks get involved with your campaign?
Well, thank you for the opportunity. Bongino.com, BONGINO.com. I would really appreciate that. And you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and certainly pick up the book, Life Inside the Bubble, if you want my perspective on how to turn things around.
Dan, we appreciate your time. Thank you for your service to this country. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you, sir. Have a great day.
Dan Bongino is a candidate for the U.S. House of Representatives in Maryland. He's a 2012 U.S. Senate candidate. He was a highly decorated U.S. Secret Service agent, was part of the Presidential Protective Detail, and he's the author of Life Inside the Bubble, Why a Top-Ranked Secret Service Agent Walked Away from It All. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.